as we, the adults, become more audacious in speaking up in public, it becomes easier and easier for new people and youngsters to be able to honor their tradition and not be embarrassed. Because right now, if the parents are afraid, which is often the case, parents don't want to get involved, they don't want to deal with this because they're ignorant, then actually the kids have no relationship with such a thing. The church invests in funding things that are outside the church if it feels that this will be useful to them. So, but in our case, there is a kind of a parochial boundary of an organization. They will only try to do it inside with their own people, even if they are not very qualified. So rather than suing Harvard, which won't work, we ought to create our own Harvard in India. We have to create the Indian Harvard. To once upon a time, the Nalandas and Takshashilas and places like that were the Harvards of the world. All these foreign people used to come to India, China, from China and Japan and Cambodia and all that to learn and go back with the knowledge. And why don't we be able to create that today? The Khalistanis are basically Jats. And the Jats are the peasants. And they're the richest peasants in India. They are not some oppressed people. They are the wealthiest community in India. It is a caste. The Jat is a caste. So they talk about no caste in Sikhism, but Jat caste is the dominant caste, and they are very proud of Jat and non-Jat. All the songs are about Jatta and Jatti and whatnot. And you know, I'm a Punjabi, so I know all these songs. Okay. So this whole kind of a Jat chauvinism, machoism, and aggressiveness is the foundation of the whole Khanistani identity.
So what's your vision for the movement that springs from this book? How do you see things going forward?
So what we're trying to do is, first of all, we're going to translate this into Hindi and make little Hindi books out of it, and also small educational videos so that more and more people can understand, get into this, get interested, and then read the whole book eventually. Or at least I would say the introduction and the overview page of each chapter. That's what we want, is to have a large informed group of people. Then we want to challenge these Siddhantas from the West. So we want to educate our people. Like right now, we've challenged the Siddhanta of this swastika that came from the West because some scholarship was done. Because people came up with these ideas and said, hey, listen, this is wrong. And we have a lot of topics covered in this book which are distortions, and we're giving a response to them. There's a 100-page chapter on the history of Varna, Jati, caste. 100-page chapter, which tells you what is written in the Shastras, what is the reality in each period of history, the Vedic period, Buddhist period, the Muslim period, European conquest, modern, post-independence period. So you get to see how an idea has evolved and changed, and what changed it, what were the dynamics. And so you see it's not some fixed idea that has always been there. It's important to know that when you're engaging in a conversation on this topic. So in this way, we are educating the people how to talk back, how to hold your own. That's one outcome. We're also educating the government. There are a lot of snakes that are sitting in India. Lot of big snakes in the government, and snakes in industry, and in media, and in academia. And we have universities like Ashoka University, full of snakes. It's not just JNU, but you know, you have them in Delhi University, history department, you have political science department, you have all kind of different departments, Kriya University, you have Tata Institute of Social Sciences. There's dozens of universities, big ones, full of these kind of snakes that have been trained from the Western world, and brought this Western universalism as their Siddhant. So those are some of the ideas. We want to change the thought of the centers that are important centers of learning in India, and the thought of the ruling elite also.
Thank you, Rajeshji. This is honestly too many questions. There's no way we can go through all of them. So I'll do my best to pick a few which are most relevant. So one question from Anshu Maheshwariji is, what can we do, let's say two or three things, to bring back our own Canadian-raised kids into Dharma? So what can we do, a few things, to bring our Canadian-raised kids into Dharma?
I think you are one of the pioneers doing that. And you need homeschooling, a lot of homeschooling. I don't think you can rely on the school system, the public school system, although you need to neutralize the negativity. That you need to do. But I think you need a bigger burden, bigger responsibility on the parents to raise the kids to be more in contact with their own dharma. And as we, the adults, become more audacious in speaking up in public, it becomes easier and easier for new people and youngsters to be able to honor their tradition and not be embarrassed. Because right now, if the parents are afraid, which is often the case, parents don't want to get involved, they don't want to deal with this because they're ignorant, then actually the kids have no relationship with such a thing. If the parents are not defending it, then why would the kids? So the best thing we as parents could do for the kids is to show publicly our support and our confidence in our heritage.
Thank you, Rajivji. Next question is by Vignesh Patil. How do we best invest in our infrastructure or ecosystem of spiritual ecosystem of gurus? So basically, what's a good way to invest, use our money so that our ecosystem, do mistakes?
So, you know, you need... Yeah, you know, the gurus need to play a bigger role in this. I mean, I could say that the work I've been trying to do for 3 decades, the government couldn't do because maybe they had to be secular and all those things. But the Sangh Parivar could be doing these things. I mean, they have manthans and they have speakers and so on, but they don't have scholarship. I mean, when they have manthans, they talk a lot of stuff, but it's not respected as scholarship per se, because scholarship requires heavy research and heavy material that has withstood due diligence and peer reviews and has a lot of authentic data and information. It's improving, it is improving. But I would say the biggest area that could be improved in this regard would be the gurus, because the gurus have resources, they have the brand value, they have the knowledge, and they are into spreading, they are into teaching whatever their core teaching is, but they haven't taken on these kind of topics seriously enough. So I would say that is a missing place. It's a dimension where we have not fully utilized it. They have enough funding. I mean, they can, Sunil, you were involved in one of those. They will try to do organic growth rather than invest in an outsider, just say, okay, you're already doing it, here is the resource, go do more. They haven't, you know, that's the one thing in this country, in the North America and in the Western world in general, that people are not hesitating to invest in somebody who's outside their institutional boundary. I mean, that's what the whole field of venture capital is, that's what the whole field of, in politics, in ideology. The church invests in funding things that are outside the church, if it feels that this will be useful to them. So, but in our case, there is a kind of a parochial boundary of an organization. They will only try to do it inside with their own people, even if they're not very qualified. So that's, I think, a limiting factor.
Next question. Can Harvard be sued for generating atrocity literature and not adhering to intellectual objectivity that is expected from a leading educational institution?
No, because you cannot, it's not a crime. It's not a crime to spread your ideology, which is false. Speaking falsehoods is not a crime. Speaking falsehoods, I can say 2 + 2 = 5, and you can call me a fool. That you can call me, you're right, I have my right. But it's nothing criminal. There's no crime, there's no law violated when they give their point of view. And, you know, there are so many siddhants. Those siddhants have their legitimacy. We don't acknowledge them. It's for us to create a Vedic liberal arts. That's the missing thing. We have not created Vedic liberal arts. We keep talking about it, and the only liberal arts that is taught in India is Western liberal arts. But in ancient India, we had these 64 kalas. We had all these different disciplines, you know, which would coincide with the scope of liberal arts in the West today. So why haven't we revived that? We haven't revived that. So we can talk about how we like to feel good about some bombastic claims of the past, which is good. We ought to do that also. But we haven't then gone the next step and really recovered the siddhant, the theories, the policies, the doctrinal things in all those disciplines which existed in our tradition and which we have lost. So rather than suing Harvard, which won't work, we ought to create our own Harvard in India. We have to create the Indian Harvard. Once upon a time, the Nalandas and Takshashilas and places like that were the Harvards of the world. All these foreign people used to come to India, China, from China and Japan and Cambodia and all that to learn and go back with the knowledge. And why aren't we able to create that today? So now there is a Nalanda University, but they made Amartya Sen the head of it in the Sonia Gandhi era. And they basically made it into a leftist version of Nalanda. What an insult, you know? So now they have brought in some new people, the Hindu type people, but they haven't been able to do anything useful. I mean, I'm surprised at whether it's politics, whatever the heck it is, with this government, 8 years, they have Nalanda, they control it, they can put anybody. I don't see them. I mean, look at what a great brand name under which so much could be done. I mean, we are doing something called Swadeshi Indology, and we've done 7 or 8 conferences, Swadeshi Indology, which means Indology from our point of view. But why hasn't Nalanda supported us? Why wouldn't they say, okay, we're going to do Swadeshi Indology as a flagship program of Nalanda, but it's not easy to, it's too difficult and too many babus involved and too much bureaucracy involved. So we haven't been able to revive the learning, the deep learning of ancient India. We have not been able to revive. That's a sad thing.
Listening to your videos, it looks like it's a losing battle for Hinduism. Or do you see a path of victory for Dharma? If so, how do you envision the journey?
So I've always been taking the toughest battles. So it looks negative because I find out who's the most dangerous, vicious opponent as an ideology and as an institution, and I take them on. And that has produced the results that we are today better than we were 30 years ago. So it has worked. And so my job is to keep doing it. I have to not sort of rest in peace that we won enough battles and there's nothing more to do. I have to say that we won certain battles and we now have to win more. So as we win battles, we discover new problems and we got to keep fighting those problems. So I would say the way ahead is to keep doing what we have been doing, but please help give it some resources. We need some resources. There's only so much I can do with my own resource. We need resources to have a force multiplier, and that's where we're looking for help. That's what people can do. The path ahead can be, give us some resources so we can accelerate what we're doing.
Everybody is talking about, or say opponents are talking about dismantling Hindu Dharma. Why is it considered necessary? Are we attacked just because our ecosystem is weak, or are there deeper ideological reasons that others are afraid of us?
Well, you know, the competition for leadership of the world includes ideological battle, not just land and real estate and economy, but also ideological. And so since the very beginning, faiths and ideologies have wanted to expand and claim more territory. In our country, we had the Buddhists, we had the Vedantins, we have Mimamsa, and among the Vedantins, we have different schools of Vedanta all wanting to expand and preach and claim leadership. So that's just natural that other people will be doing that too. So now it becomes political when people see that Hinduism is very central to the unity of India, and those who want to harm India, they realize one of the things that holds India together is Hindu dharma, and therefore dismantling it and attacking it and weakening it would be a part of their game plan. So whoever is has an agenda against India want to fund these kind of things. The tragedy is that our own people are funding it too. That is a very tragic thing. That's kind of hypocrisy, and we should call that hypocrisy.
Thank you, Rajaji. Next question from Raghu is, I'm an IITian. I'll answer this one. It's simple. Can you get details of Harvard promoting IIT as caste? So that's one full chapter on it, chapter 4.
Chapter 4 you can read. It's on this. And go to, if you go to my YouTube, it's Rajiv Official or something like that. Rajiv Malhotra Official or Infinity Foundation Official. And last week, there was a 50-minute video discussion with 3 IIT Madras professors. And that was that is a real eye-opener. It's done very well. And that is where we are discussing the challenges and attacks on IIT. And these I have to go and educate, I have to go and inform them and get them interested in responding. Many IIT professors didn't want to respond. Many IITians in Silicon Valley don't want to respond because it's politically incorrect for them. They would rather be safe and not jeopardize their business and profession, because responding to a Harvard would be very controversial, even though Harvard is attacking their institution. And I'm not an IIT guy. I'm sticking my neck out and defending them. IITians need to support us, but they haven't yet.
Question from Parikshit. In Canada, we are noticing high visibility of Khalistani movement. It has even come to a point when the poster propaganda of Khalistani is outside of Gurdwara and is on the streets. What are your thoughts on fighting back this propaganda intellectually?
So this morning I did a interview with the Canada Hindi News, you know, and he said, it's a right in Canada to have free speech, and even the separatists in Canada, you know, the French-speaking separatists in Canada have rights, and they even have people in the parliament. And so, you know, Khalistanis are no different. And you can be a separatist, and your free speech is allowed. And I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. But then my free speech to criticize them should also be allowed. And I've tried to do that, and they snub, and they are very vulgar and very very obscene and very rude, and they try to shut you down. So if I were a Canadian, I would like to go in front of the Gurdwara and put up some basic facts. The Khalistanis are basically Jats. And the Jats are the peasants. And they are the richest peasants in India. They are not some oppressed people. They are the wealthiest community in India. It is a caste. The Jat is a caste. So they talk about no caste in Sikhism, but Jat caste is the dominant caste, and they are very proud of Jat and non-Jat. All the songs are about Jatta and Jatti and whatnot. And you know, I'm a Punjabi, so I know all these songs. Okay. So this whole kind of a Jat chauvinism, machoism, and aggressiveness is the foundation of the whole Khalistani identity. Firstly, it is caste. Secondly, they are not oppressed. They are the richest people, among the richest communities in India. I went to them, and they actually shouted at me in one of these online gatherings that here comes this Brahmin from RSS to we have to attack this Brahmin from RSS. So I said, first of all, I'm not a Brahmin. And secondly, I'm not from RSS. I mean, I respect a lot of the things they do, but I'm not from RSS. And then I said, how many of you know of any Brahmin in Punjab? And give me a name. Any of you know a Brahmin in Punjab? I never met a Brahmin in Punjab. I mean, there are some, I'm sure. But the Punjab is not dominated by Brahmins. I mean, you have the Jats, and you have the Khatris, and you have the Bedis. These are all the castes of Punjab. They're not Brahmins. So they're all quiet. And then I said, what is destroying your community? You as the Jats, what is destroying your community? Tell me what's destroying. There's no Brahmin destroying it. But tell me who's destroying? What is destroying? And they say, they looked around. I said, you know, The church is the, in the Christianity conversion in Punjab is the fastest in Asia. Fastest in Asia. And they are building a cathedral in near Jalandhar, which will be the Asia's largest cathedral, visible from 20, 25 kilometers away. And that's giant kind of a complex. Okay, that's what they're building. The amount of money coming in. So your families, your children are being converted at a frantic rate. And the reason you're losing Sikhism is not because some Brahmin attacking you, but because the church is attacking you. There's no Brahmins that try to convert Sikhs for all these centuries. Okay. In fact, the Sikhs defended the Brahmins. And so shame on you guys, because now you're so mixed up and so stupid that basically the church is converting your people and you're not worrying about that. And then I said, what's the other big problem? And they were again quiet. I said, drugs. Punjab has got more drugs than any other in the state. Drugs, alcohol, all this kind of addiction. So your children are being destroyed by being converted and also the addiction problems. That is what destroying you, and you're blaming it on Hindus, and you're blaming it on Indian government, and you're not blaming it on your own stupidity. And that is the right I have. I told this guy, I have a right to speak all this at their face in front of their Gurdwara, and will you give me that right? If Canada says everybody has free speech, then can I put up such a poster? Can I put up the big poster in front of the Gurdwara making these points? And he said, haan, theek baat hai, aapko bhi right hona chahiye. So have you...
Thank you very much, Rajivji.
No, so I want to ask, if after checking with Canadian legal people, they say that, yeah, this is your right, why don't you put big, huge billboards in front of every Gurdwara and say, challenge to the Sikh Khalistanis, 1, 2, 3. What are you doing about the drug problem in Punjab? What are you doing about the expansion of the church, taking away all your children? Why don't you admit that you are the wealthiest community, the Jat community in Punjab because of the agriculture boom, wealthiest community in India, why don't you acknowledge that? You can just make a whole list of such things. So you should do that.
Thank you, Rajaji. Chapter 6 of your book tells long story of caste. It is so complex in current times and convoluted. What path you see to getting to a society of dharmic framework, is it even possible? It seems like multi-generational issue to come over caste issue.
So I don't think that caste in its current form is useful. And I think it is actually not functioning among... So certainly when people come to Canada or US or somewhere, I mean, you're not caste conscious. You don't hire people based on are you the right caste and so on. People hire whoever is good for them. People are very pragmatic. When things are very competitive in a modern society, then it's not a caste-based hiring, firing. And that's not, you can look at all the big industries, the tech industries and all that. They're not caste-oriented at all. And even in India, if you look in the urban cities, there is no caste awareness that people have. In some, maybe in the south, there is more awareness, and in some villages in Bihar and all that, yes, there is. So as education spreads and as there's more mobility, people moving away from their location or their town and going to some other town, living there, and the kids marrying and intermarrying and whatnot, I think these things are gradually going away. It's an intergenerational thing. I don't think we need to go to Harvard and get their help. These problems are getting solved.
Thank you, Rajivji. What does it take to write such a deep and investigative book like Snakes in the Ganga? How long did it take for you to write the book? What process did you go through?
So it's a very difficult thing to tell somebody the process you go through. It's a lot of processes, a lot of iterations, and a lot of trial and error, experimenting, calling it this and framing it this way, that way. And you know, it's just a huge amount of work. I mean, I don't know. It's not a simple answer is what I can tell you. It would take a lot of effort. Maybe I'll do a seminar on how you could write a book, or at least how I write a book. But it's not a simple one-minute kind of process I can describe.
Has your recent trip to Bharat made you feel more hopeful about Hindus being able to fight wokeism more effectively? Are people waking up?
Yes, I think for the first time after many books and many attempts, I found some interesting things happen. First of all, I found that a whole generation of social media influencers who got their own channels and all that emerged by reading Breaking India and Being Different and these kind of books. And they're all over the place, basically recycling that knowledge as their own, not acknowledging the source. And that's old habit. A lot of people say jugaad, that's just the jugaad of scholarship. Jugaad applied to scholarship people, everybody. So none of them showed up to any of my events. None of these, I won't name names, but none of these guys trying to become very popular and all of that, basically using my ideas only, none of them would show up even though they knew about it. But guess what? The government taking it very seriously because they see it as an issue. MPs and people like that who never earlier participated in my books. And most of all, mainstream media. I got interviewed by not only Republic and NewsX, but CNN, News 18, Times Now, three times they interviewed. I would say the mainstream media took it very seriously. Some Supreme Court lawyer type people took it very seriously, some serious academic people. So it has reached the attention of the work has reached the attention of very important thinkers and institutions. Now it's like Chartered Accountants Institution and FICCI and Institute of Direct Corporate Directors, Institute of this and that. That are the next level of targets for me to go and address. And I will when I do my next level of workshops. So these social media influencers, I bypass them. Because I think that that level brings awareness among the popular level, but it doesn't go seriously. To make change, I should bring it to the attention of people who control the instruments of power, the machinery, the state machinery, the babus, these kind of people. Military people, very interested. National security people, very interested. Diplomatic people, very interested. So they have machinery at their disposal. And as they get more concerned and interested in these issues, it's good for me because they take these ideas further and turn it into policy. Whereas popular level, the mass media has helped in this instance, and that's good enough for me.
Thank you, Rajeshji. There's four or five questions that are related to government stuff. I'll just mix and match and maybe you can answer them together. Vipul Jani is saying, why is Indian government being too soft on the crushing these snakes, allowing too much leeway without consequences? Currently, Modi government seems to be pro-Bharatiya civilization. Why Modi government has not been able to utilize your research? Basically, what's your reaction on how government is doing and how they're working with you?
So government is not, I have no official relationship. I don't expect to have it. I'm not part of any institution or any organization. And that's the beauty of being independent. I can do what I do because I don't have to answer to anybody. The moment I join this or that group, I will have to compromise my freedom, my creativity, and I don't want to do that. But the price I pay is that I'm an outsider. I'm always viewed as an outsider, and that's the benefit and the handicap of being an individual thinker. And so I rely on people like you to support, to show that this matters to you, and therefore others take seriously. Now, government does take these ideas seriously. They bought big institutions, big organizations have taken hundreds of copies each and gotten their people to read it, and they want me to do workshops. So I think without mentioning the book, I think they'll begin to start taking these ideas seriously, and they'll start maybe investigating some people, some things. They'll start keeping an eye on some things.
Thank you, Rajeshji. I have four or five questions which are like similar in terms of solutions. I'll club them and maybe you can answer them together. What are the top action items that would be good for Bharati civilization inside and outside India? Like think of it offensive versus defensive. Another one from Sunil Kardar is, what are the top issues that India is facing or Bharati civilization is facing these days? Another one from Pujaji is, how do we train gatekeepers so that these snakes can be controlled? How do we make Hinduism fun kind of thing? So they are all solution kind of things, but more about, I guess, the priority of top issues, offensive, defensive.
Yeah. Maybe we need to bring back snake charmers. Huh? Who know how to, yeah. Who know how to mesmerize, maybe make the snakes dance for us. Maybe figure out what will make these snakes dance for us, you know. So if somebody is feeding them money, giving them food and making them do their thing, and maybe we can counter it somehow. But anyway, more seriously, I think, you see, we're still developing what the actual implementation should be, but it's very exciting. The book has been out September 26th. So today is like what, how many days? It's like 40 days. 40 days or something like that, right? 40 days. And we've already finished two print runs. We're now finishing the third print run. So it's got traction. And we've just starting our North America. My Canada trip is the first place in North America I'm coming for this. And now I'm going to Harvard to give a talk at the Harvard Faculty Club. So we'll promote this video after that event because I don't want them to cancel it. There'll be a lot of people shouting, screaming to try and cancel it. But it's at the Harvard Faculty Club, which is a very prestigious place. The other person, we are two person discussing with a moderator. And the other person is a very well-known, very senior professor at Harvard on Hinduism. And he's the senior most person. He's a Christian, but his topic is Hinduism. And we're going to have a discussion. And we're going to record it. And so we'll show you something very exciting after that happens. And then I'm going to Stanford. I'm also going to Stanford. So yep. In Stanford, mm-hmm. We are being hosted by the Policy Institute at Stanford. And I'm going to do a town hall style, take on the whole campus, and people can ask me questions and all that live. We'll have 2-3 hours. So it'll be very exciting. Tell me.
Yeah. Namaste, Rajivji. I had a question, actually. I'd like to elaborate on that. My question was, how do you train the gatekeepers to prevent these so-called snakes to infiltrate and infest dharmic institutions and dharmic organizations like Sangha or, you know, all the big organizations that are doing a lot of good work.
Yeah, yeah.
But since they have an open door policy, like you said, Vasudeva Kutumbakam, everybody's invited. So there are no background checks, how do you train gatekeepers for such organizations so that we can prevent such individuals from infiltrating them?
So that's a great question. You invite me to conduct a training workshop. I mean, I don't need money. I don't need this, that. I need nothing. I need students. You say that we're going to collect 200 students, and each of them, you guys will get them a book. They should get the book. And you should charge them a fee so that they are serious. I don't need a part of that. But you charge them a fee. You can give it to Mandir here, whatever. But I want there to be serious people, and it should be, I'll conduct a workshop. I'll be very happy to conduct a workshop. I would conduct a workshop on, maybe you can call it the Hindu toolkit, or you can call it Hindu Kshatriyata, or you can call it, workshop for control snake gatekeepers, yes, and snake charmers, whatever you want to call it. But I would love, if you organize it in advance, tell Sunil, and I'll come back and would love to conduct such a workshop, maybe at least half a day or a 1 day workshop.
And just so you know, originally when I got anchored in this work, about, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, we did conduct 2-day workshop here in Toronto, Intellectual Kshatriyata. And that's when I guess this whole thing was like Kshatriyata thing was, at least for our group, was kind of codified and taught to us. So that was a great experience. So I would love to partner with you if you want to do more of that. So we're running a little bit out of time. I have last three questions. One little bit higher level. one for us and one for Rajiv Ji, I guess three contexts. So first, the generic one. What are some of the key principles to unite Hindus better? So we work with each other a little bit better, and we are not passive and assertive at the same time. Some of the guiding principles.
So, you know, if somebody got the successful formula on how to make Hindus work with each other better, I would be so happy. My life would be easy. I mean, you know, seriously, I had to cancel all my Southern California events, except one, because I had somebody else. I appreciate her work. She's very helpful, very nice person. I was in India, and I said, you know, each region, each city, we outsource it to somebody, and as the leader who was going to organize all of them. So this person tried very well, and she came up with 7 events they were going to do in Southern California. And then one day when I said, I want to speak to the 7 leaders because I want to know who takes ownership, it turns out that 5 out of the 7 didn't even show up for a conference call. So they wanted the name, but they didn't want to be held responsible. And then it turned out digging deeper into it, some people didn't want to work with us. And then it came down to this one fellow said that it's me or it's them. And, you know, so I don't know how to manage it, because as far as I'm concerned, they should all be there. But there, to them, it was a very big deal. So because of this infighting, then this guy dropped out. Then that community said, we can't give them this hall. They have to go there. So at the end of the day, I got so sick, I just canceled the whole thing. I don't want to go there. And there's one meeting in somebody's house. That's really a nice meeting. I'll go for that. Bay Area is different, because Bay Area, somebody was able to keep the whole thing together. Boston area is different, because one man is able to organize all the events in the Boston area. So like that, I'm noticing that it depends on each place. Generally, you know, this is very interesting. Every city in North America, and probably is true in Europe also, there are multiple Hindu groups, and they're all kind of organizing, you know. So is the Hindu ecosystem largely an ego system?
Yes.
You know, I think the Hindu ecosystem is a Hindu ego system, and I don't have the recipe how to solve that, because that's what the gurus, the rishis have been trying to solve for thousands of years.
Thank you, Rajaji.
Maximize your leadership credit, minimize what you have to do for it, and especially the responsibility to take charge of something. So that's a kind of a formula. It's an ego formula. You're optimizing return on investment, meaning I put the minimum investment, get the maximum return. That's not right, you know. So how to fix it, I don't know. I mean, but it's a serious problem.
If you had $10 million funding, what would you do? If you had $100 million funding, what's the best use you see of the money for Hindu cause?
Write to me, I'll send you my wiring instructions. Yeah, I mean, that's not a 30-second answer. I give you a whole presentation if you are interested in that. If it's not just a curiosity, gossip kind of a thing, which would waste time, but if it's a serious thing, we have done those kind of exercises, and we would be very happy to share with you.
All right. In the interest of time, because I know many of you want to get the book signed, last question. What do you expect a common reader or layman reader to do after reading and understanding the issues? Your book seems to be written for intellectuals or deep thinkers. What's your message to a layman, regular professional family person who doesn't want to get involved in social causes besides taking care of their own family?
Well, if at the very least, you should then fund such a thing. So what you can do is you can buy 50 copies, 100 copies, distribute them. That helps us a lot. You can do things that don't require you to stick your neck out. It doesn't take a whole lot of resources. Things of that kind you can do. And one thing every one of you I would request you to do is do a one or two sentence review and put it on Amazon, because the algorithm is driven by what the reviews are saying. And the algorithms read and see how many stars they got, this and that, and then they drive how much, who they promote and what they do. The algorithm is a game. You can play the game and help me. So it's a very practical thing that all of you can do. It won't take you more than 5 minutes to go to Amazon and just look up my book and put in a review.
I don't see it in Amazon.
Is what?
Is not there on Amazon Canada.
Kindle, but you can put a review on that also. Any edition you put a review, it goes to their entire reviews. Yeah, and you know, it should be available on Canada. I mean, somebody has to arrange how to make it available. I don't know how to do this, but somebody can look into this. How to make the hard copy books available. That should be. My other books have been available.
But if you or any of your friends need the book, want the book, I mean, besides what's in the back, I mean, you have our information and we have the stock here to distribute all the Rajiv Ji's book. So thank you very much, Rajiv Ji. Let's thank Rajiv Ji for all his time with a big hand. And-